Hello everyone, welcome to myself, Max McGillivray from Beanstalk. We're having a catch-up today with Belinda Clark of Agritech E, and it's sort of a mix of our Beanstalk 20 on 20 interview series, where we spend 20 minutes, it's never 20 minutes, with inspirational people from the international food sectors to find out more about them. But we also, with Belinda, we really want to major this chat, this one-off chat, about the organisation that she and her colleagues run called Agritech E. So Belinda, is it okay if I, Belinda, say hello to the world first.
Hello to the world first.
And we're streaming live to Facebook, onto LinkedIn, and you might be consuming this content via YouTube and also on our podcast series. So let's give Belinda and her team a bit of an introduction. So Agritech E is bringing together farmers and growers with scientists, technologists and entrepreneurs to create a global innovation hub in Agritech. They're a business-focused membership organization supporting the growth of a world-leading network of innovative farmers, producers, scientists, technologists and entrepreneurs who share a vision of increasing the productivity, profitability and sustainability of agriculture. Together, they aim to help turn challenges into business opportunities and facilitate mutual beneficial collaboration. Their members have opportunities for profile with the membership and beyond, including via their highly connected social media platforms. You can see that from looking behind Belinda, if you can see this either live on YouTube. They also have the ability to have personal introductions and brokered connections with potential collaborators, customers, or investors. Also, there's a free discounted access to inspirational program of networking events with speakers who are leaders in their field. And there's also timely information about funding opportunities and relevant research. And how do they support innovation? So Agritech E supports innovation by facilitating conversations and connections. My phrase, Belinda, that I think I've said to you before, you create the conversation rather than being part of the conversation. And you also accelerate the application of research and technology developments through events and communication. You also support businesses wanting to engage with the agri-food system, and you create opportunities for networking through a vibrant events program through the likes of your annual RIC conference held in November. Belinda, how have I done? Have I done a good sales process pitch on you, or have you got anything else to add, please?
Yeah, that sounds rather a good organisation. I might join it myself. Beautifully put, Max. Thank you. That's exactly what we do. Bring people together.
Okay, so let's challenge you. A old boss of mine, when I said we've got to get more involved with industry groups per se, so that we could raise our profile and meet people, he always stated to me, what is the point, Max? These groups are but talking shops. Nothing comes out of it. Is Agritech E a talking shop? What are your deliverables? What do you do? Do you create success? What's the point of Agritech E?
So I guess, you know, I mean, I'm not as against talking shops as you might think, because in a way you need to start the conversations in order to get the outputs. So there is some conversation, that's where it all starts. But then what we do is sort of step away from those conversations and leave the different partners to carry on to progress them. And we track impact. We've got some examples of some amazing projects where scientists or technology companies have started working with farmers, and they've either changed their thinking about what the industry needs, or it's been adopted and implemented by the end user. So it's around, I guess, sort of increasing the frequency of bumping into potential customers and clients, really, is what it's all about.
Okay, great, thank you. And I totally agree. We're members of Agritech E, and we've had some great introductions through the various events that you've held, that you've kindly allowed us to attend. What's the background to Agritech E? How long has it been formed? How was it formed? Did you come up with a magic wand, or was there a big man involved who looked to create this out of nothing?
So I guess it goes back to sort of 2013, really, where in the UK there was a big appetite for Agritech. For the first time ever, there was a national strategy for Agritech with quite a lot of money, public money associated with it. And there were some people around in the space in the east of England, actually, from the sort of the research community, the grower community, politicians, who said, golly, there's a real kind of zeitgeist for Agritech starting to build. And in this major arable centric and research centric region of the UK, we probably really need to start pulling people together into some sort of network that will actually enable harnessing of this groundswell of appetite amongst policymakers to see what the impact that this amazing sector can have on kind of UK GDP, as well as people's health, well-being, all of that. So it was really a coalition of the willing, and there was a little bit of pump prime funding was put up, and my job was to then make it into a sustainable business, which we now are.
So Belinda, where are you now? What's the makeup of your team? Show off your team to us, please.
Yeah, they're really sorry. They send their apologies. I wanted them to be able to join us today, but we ran an event this morning, so they're all a little bit worn out from that. But so we grew organically. They started off with half a person, which is the amazing Becky Dodds, who was half time with us and half time with another network organisation. She then joined us full time. We then had another half a person, and then they came full time. So for now, there's actually four and a half of us. So there's Becky, joined by Fiona Rust, who looks after our events and admin, Laura Bouvet, who we share with, she works part-time with us and part-time with AHDB, who looks after projects. And our newest colleague is Alex Dinsdale, who looks after our growth and our relationships with our international partners, of whom there are an increasing number.
So where I'm quite fascinated by AgriTechie is competition. That over the last couple of years, especially in the likes of the vertical farming space, there's been so many people who come into this area. There seems to be a bit of a gold rush, whether it be companies looking to set up or those that are looking to report on the sectors. Do you find it quite difficult to actually be heard because of the amount of new voices that are coming in who are looking to be quite noisy and disruptive and sort of do what you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, people always ask, you know, who are your competition? And we started off being called AgriTech East because we were based in the East. And now more than half our members are not in the East of England. So we changed our name at the end of 2018 to be AgriTech E to reflect our sort of increasing geographic scope of our membership. So to be honest, Max, you know, competition, it's a funny thing, isn't it? I don't get particularly bent out of shape around competition. I think, you know, aim to be the best at what you do. And my colleague Alex shared a phrase with us that we repeat to each other a lot in the team about controlling your airspace. So instead of worrying about what other people are doing, we have faith in our business model. We have faith in what we do. And, you know, people come, people go, but we're still here. So competition/collaboration, I think this is such a big and exciting sector across the planet that, you know, I think there's room for more like us.
Yeah, but well said. And as per my intro, the whole bit of collaboration does look to be very key with AgriTechie. And just so we can learn about the membership, can you just give us a bit of an understanding about the membership or the connections that you've got, not just in the UK, but internationally?
Sure. So we have across the value chain, starting at sort of fundamental research in some of the universities that are active, pretty much most of the ones in the UK active in agricultural research, including your alma mater, Harper Adams. So I'm very pleased to have that kind of fundamental and applied research going through to really some of the most innovative farmers and growers in the UK are in the membership. And then those kind of technical, I hesitate to call them service providers, but they provide on-farm technical services, either agronomy or they've got sensor or technology companies, solutions to sell to farmers or to work with farmers. And then a little bit around post-harvest processing. And we have some sort of knocking on the door of retail. We don't really work too much with the retail end, but obviously they're increasingly interested in what's going on in the research, because that all pulls through. In terms of geography, we've got a number of sort of strategic relationships, if you like. We've got an event coming up with the Western Growers Association. We've signed a memorandum of understanding with them because as a group, they produce around half of North America's fresh produce, so vegetables, fruit, and tree nuts. And they want to build a technology stack around automated field management, crop management, both in broadacre and in controlled environments. So they're scouting around the world to try and find the best in class technologies to work with. And so we're working with them. We've also got relationships with colleagues in the Netherlands. So again, you know, with the University of Wageningen, a lot of research, a lot of a big cluster there. So connecting with best in class globally is really what it's about. Australia, South Korea, we do quite a lot with, and our colleagues in Missouri. We took a mission to St. Louis, Missouri, and they're going to be doing a virtual inward mission with us in April. They're bringing some of their companies to the UK, sadly only digitally, but we're going to make it work.
And membership, what's the general makeup of the memberships? Is it one-man bands all the way through to major malts and everything in between? What's the standard makeup, please?
Pretty much that, exactly. So our entry-level membership is what we call seedling, which is for companies of fewer than 10 full-time members of staff. So there's the one- and two-person startup and consultancies, up to the big multinationals, and then there are some tiers in between. So, you know, we try and operate a bit of a flat structure, you know, so the small ones can sit alongside the big ones quite comfortably, and you know, everyone's equal, really.
Fantastic. And membership-wise, what's the benefit of being a member? I know we've sort of gone over it, but if you could just be a bit more specific, just in case there's someone on the cusp of joining, but they might be looking at other things, or they might be just thinking that they can get the information online. Why should people become a member of AgriTechE?
We asked them this, actually. We said, why do you become a member of AgriTechE? So just so we could kind of understand our value proposition, if you like. And people join for different reasons. So some, particularly the smaller ones, they want the profile via the ecosystem. Our members get a page in our member directory, and they can add lots of content to that, which all then pulls through into sort of wider Google searches. So there's a whole kind of profile piece. Then there's more of a bespoke kind of who would you like to meet? So introducing people to each other. We've got a wish list of whether it's a tech company wanting to meet farmers, or it might be a grower business that might want to say, well, have you got any technologies that are in, let's pick an example, non-chemical, biological crop management, for example, or livestock tracking? So if they've got a particular challenge, they'll come to us and say, who have you got that might be able to help? So a lot of kind of brokered relationships. Wow. And some of the bigger ones, amazingly, and they will admit to this, they don't necessarily know who they don't know. Yeah. So just demonstrating this kind of smorgasbord of the ecosystem to them, which obviously they can't have comprehensive coverage over the whole world. So we just help them do a bit of a deeper dive into this ecosystem that has some really interesting people and technologies in it.
And last year, how did AgriTech get on communicating with your membership base in our strange times?
Oh, yeah, it was a funny time, wasn't it? So,
Hold on, is it over? Have I missed something?
No, yeah. Well, hopefully, at least we kind of know what we're doing for a while. I mean, God, what a steep learning curve. I often said it, you know, we had 6 years learning to become the organisation we were, and we had 6 weeks to learn to do it all digitally, which, all credit to the team who had to be on a very steep learning curve with exactly the kind of technology we're using for this conversation. So it was hard work, but we did it. And we have come into 2021 with a whole raft of digital events, which I think everyone says that it's not the same, but you know, there are some additional benefits. And you know, everybody's saying, what are events going to be like when this is all over? And I think we're certainly going to retain a digital element.
Yeah.
What we do, you know, the new platform that we're using for our events has all sorts of functionalities around networking, around meeting new people. And I think necessity really has been the mother of invention. And we're seeing some really exciting new software platforms that we're going to be harnessing so that people can kind of meet the unusual, not the usual suspects, you know, the people who you'd meet in the coffee queue if you were at a conference. Trying to help those people bump into each other and swap virtual business cards. So it's been a challenge, but it's been fine. We've done it. We've checked in with our members. They seem to like what we do. They seem to have been happy with what we did. We got, I think it was 4.4 out of 5 for our virtual REAP conference in terms of member satisfaction. So delegate satisfaction.
And Belinda, have you gained members or lost members in 2020?
Well, since you asked, we've had a 20% increase in membership over the last year, which I think actually says, you know, as a bellwether for the industry appetite for innovation and the hope and ambition that technology and new practices and new ways of doing things is going to help get us through this. So I think it's a reflection, and, you know, colleagues that we check in with, the appetite has never been stronger. And of course, the as we talked about when we were on the podcast over in the summer, there's never been such an interest in the food system. Yeah. Plus, in the UK, there's a lot of policy changes with EU exit. There was a big gene editing consultation was launched at the Oxford Farming Conference last week. We've got some big policy changes. The Agriculture Act is now in place. So there's going to be lots of transition thinking among farmers. So it's an amazing time in the industry in the UK. Globally, sadly, all our friends and colleagues in other countries are experiencing exactly what we are with the pandemic. So we're all in it together.
And I think the word of the year this year won't be, I can't hear you, unmute yourself. I think the word might be hybrid. And because especially with these events, what I'm picking up is that whether it be in America or Australia or South Africa, people are still not confident about going to events any day soon. And when the events do open up, I think that it's going to be a hybrid version of that. There will be a physical event, but they will be filmed and streamed on these sort of platforms. And hopefully the technology that you intimated earlier and versions of it will mean that you can still sort of bump into that person in the coffee queue. Don't ask me how that actually will happen. But then being able to either go live to it in person if you're in that vicinity, or to be able to dial in to watch it from overseas. And the exhibitors, sponsors having their own booths, and people being able to engage either face to face or on a virtual basis. So I think that these hybrid events are going to be very, very exciting for 2021 and beyond.
Yes, I would agree with you. I have to say, I would put a little caveat on that, because we've been talking quite a lot about what that hybrid model might look like. And if I have a worry, it's that trying to run, you're almost running two events. You're thinking about your online audience as well as your in the room audience. And you almost need two parallel delivery teams, one to look after the what's going on in the room, and one to ensure that the digital experience is equally strong. Now, for a small organization like us, that would pose a challenge. I think some of the big conferences, that absolutely will happen. We're still thinking about how we make that work, whether, I mean, you do an amazing job, Max, when you do your vlogging on the fly at events. And just, you know, is it going to be walking around with a phone, a video camera, and just having bumping into people and having chat? I don't know. I don't know how it's going to happen simultaneously, but no doubt we'll find a way. We'll innovate our way through it.
But obviously the advantage of it being a hybrid event is that on the virtual side, the reach is just...
Yeah.
It's just colossal, and not just live, but also on a recording basis. There's listening to the podcast. It's obviously a recording that you're listening to with the technology that Belinda and I are now using. We're streaming live to Facebook and to LinkedIn, and that automatically, when we finish this this conversation, that chat automatically comes out as a record. So there's so many times for the consumption of that that content. That's why I'm quite excited about these various platforms. So Belinda, come on, excite us. What have you got coming up in the early stages of 2021 that your members can go and get involved with, or potential new members can get excited about and come and collaborate with, can come and join you? What have you got coming up, please?
Well, one of the things I hope that the people who'll be watching this might be really inspired by is something that we've got coming up on Tuesday next week, actually, which I think is the 19th of January. So we were thinking last year a lot about, everyone's talking about microbes and viruses and how you get rid of all these things. And obviously, contamination in the food supply chain is a massive issue. So we're doing an event around non-chemical solutions about how to get rid of pathogens, of bacteria, fungi and viruses from within the agri-food chain. And so we're not just going to be talking about bleach. We're going to be talking about alternative states of matter. We're going to be talking about ozone and electrolyzed water. And all of these things are actually now, the technology is there. It's scaling up. And one which I'm, I mean, it was my mission to mention the Northern Lights in this podcast. I mean, how random is that? But a company called Zaindu is harnessing what happens in the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights, because you get, once you introduce an electrical current into the air, it splits it into the oxygen and nitrogen molecules, split into their component atoms. And those atoms are dead excited and want to grab onto something and destroy them. And they grab onto viruses and bacteria and they destroy them. So it's a really effective disinfectant. You're completely dry. You don't have to use any water at all. And they've been working with, I think, the University of Loughborough. And they are launching the Aurora Z10, which is their new product. And launching that at our event on Tuesday. So we're really, really excited about that. And we're going to be talking about electrolyzed water as a company called Ozone Innovations works more with food processors to try and cut the costs of food hygiene, which I've heard a figure, I don't know if this is true, 14% of costs in food processing is around hygiene. Able to clean down your equipment using ozone, so you don't have to use water that you have to heat up and then you have to cool the whole lot down again. So we'll be talking around all these different types of innovation that are not using chemicals, that are kind of hopefully a bit more environmentally benign. So we're kind of excited about using alternative states of matter. That feels very very agritech.
So let's just date check that. So that's Keeping It Clean with Agritech Innovation, Tuesday the 19th of January, 2 to 4 p.m. GMT. Did I say T? GMT. Members free, non-members £30. And presumably if everyone bowls onto your website, they'll see all the details on there, Belinda, will they?
For sure. And you know what? If people have been watching this and they've as a result of seeing this, they let us know. If they say it's a referral on Beanstalk, then even if they're not members, we might be minded to waive the introduction, the delegate fee. So let's call it a freebie for a Beanstalk referral. How's that?
Everyone, it must be Friday because Belinda has never ever offered that in the past. Now that one sounds fascinating. And so what else? What else have you got, please?
You talked earlier about our international relationships and our colleagues in the Western Growers Association. We've got I hope is going to be a really cool opportunity to hear firsthand from the growers what their challenges are. So they particularly are interested in automated field harvest for fresh produce. And so they're doing a kind of bring out your tech program. So anyone who really wants to hear firsthand from companies like Driscoll's, for example, what are the needs, the technological needs? And then we've got a load of the tech people from our network listening in on that, and we hope that's then going to be the start of a beautiful relationship. So again, that's open to anyone, free to members, charge for non-members, to just come and find out a bit more about what these really large American California-based, most of them, companies are looking for in terms of technical innovation and where they see the pinch points are, where they're looking globally to scout for tech.
So that's AgriTech Emissions, Automating Agriculture, Opportunities for UK Ag Tech to Help US Fruit and Vegetable Growers, Wednesday, the 27th of January, 3 to 5pm GMT. One technical question, if someone can't get on and they've paid, registered, do you do a record like we do with Beanstalk?
I mean, this is always a tricky one. I'm going to be completely transparent here. So what we want to do is kind of get the network conversation going. And it's a really tricky one because you're right, people have paid, so therefore they could access the content. What we're a bit nervous about is having, 60% of people register, get the content later, and then you've kind of missed the moment. Because I think what we're trying to do is still keep that sense of energy and the cohesion around the network at the event. So please don't let it be a disincentive to coming. If you can't be there at the time, we will sort something out. But routinely, we don't make the recordings available because we like people to all be sort of experiencing the same thing at the same time. Does that make sense?
So totally. You're basically telling us off. You've got to treat it as a live event because it's a live event. Attend it as a live event. Get there because it's live.
Beautifully put.
Yeah. Okay. And just on that side about, let's just call it robotics, automating agriculture. I had an interesting conversation with an individual recently who was saying that there isn't that much interest from big investors to get involved with agriculture and fresh produce on for automation, because there's more money in the defense sector or in the car sector. Why would a company, if they got the opportunity to make something fearful for the defense sector and they're going to get paid gazillions by the US government, why would they diverse and make a machine that's going to pick apples? What's your view, please?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. The investors we work with, and obviously it's a very skewed subset of the global investment community, there is an enormous appetite for for deal flow into agriculture and agri-tech in particular. So I was talking to somebody on Monday. They've got a 50 million fund that one is specific for the UK, but the fund is being raised in the Middle East, and they're looking at other markets as well. And they wanted to put more in. So I think what it does, it's tending to attract people that are more persuaded by the narrative around sustainable production of healthy, nutritious food. And I think, dare I say, particularly among some of the younger entrepreneurs, that passion. It's not idealistic. It's a passion, and it's a commitment to change the world through technology and through the food system. And I think that's just an amazing thing to be part of. So
do you think there's a number of investors who they're actually shunning money because they want to do good? They want to get involved with businesses that will do good, will add to the sustainability of the planet. I can't remember the details, just watching the doom and gloom of our UK 10 o'clock news last night, that climate change, if we don't do something within 100 years, well, Belinda, no offense to you and I, we won't be here, but within 100 years, the whole thing's going to come. So do you think there's a bit of a zeitgeist towards this to do good? And so rather than putting it into bombs, they actually do want to put it into doing good within food?
Yes, is the short answer. But I don't think it's just about ideology. I think they're seeing that there is a real business case here, because, impact investing, people are wanting to see that their savings are not being put into things which will destroy the planet. They want to see investments that are ethical and that are not destroying, communities and habitats and all of that. So I don't think it's entirely ideological. I think there's a sound business case which is driving this flow of money into the sector.
Yeah. OK. And the couple of things that I've really picked up from last year from our various broadcasts. So the example I've used so many times is Legal & General. Legal & General in the UK, everyone, is one of the biggest pension funds. And they've stated to the 100 top companies that they invest into that by the end of 2022, if they don't have a diversified main board, they're withdrawing all of their funding. So they're creating a behavioral change within big businesses to create that diversity. And you can see that those funds, if they're getting pressure from their investors, great, you've sorted that diversity issue. Now food. We don't want our young kids eating, don't swear, rubbish. We want them to be eating wholesome, fresh produce. You must, Legal & General, invest in those companies. And so we might. What do you think? We might see more behavioural change coming from the top down, from big investors such as Legal & General or some of these funds that you've been talking about.
Yeah, for sure. And it's across the value chains. Obviously, some have their interest that's post farm gate. Others are more interested in the pre-farm gate positioning, but absolutely, I think it's a brave investor. It's a brave investor that will say, we're going to invest our funds in things which are going to be the kind of things that most millennials and above are not going to really find as palatable, perhaps, as earlier generations did. It's not just about the money. It's about doing good as well. And, I was seeing a report the other day that people are saying climate change is the biggest change agent coming out of the pandemic. Economies, okay, they're on their knees, but let's look at the climate as well. Yep. And that's going to drive investment.
So I was being a bit dismissive about the comment I got, that my contact saying, well, these companies looking to go down the automated avenue. So instead of them developing bombs, there's actually a a real drive to get involved within the food sector and creating sustainability, diversity, so on. So you're positive that that's all heading in the right direction?
Completely. I was talking to a colleague he's an investor and he's an organic farmer as well. And we were having exactly this conversation. And there's an organization in the UK that's looking at developing carbon negative fruit. Negative fruit.
Yeah.
And the thinking being that, you know, there'll be a consumer premium on that. And this colleague was saying, this is amazing. This is great. Actually, all fruit needs to be. You need to buy it because of its carbon credentials, not just because of all the other good things about it, you know, the way it's produced and you know, the provenance of it, but also because it has this carbon credential as well. And he said, if we don't have that within the next 15 years, we're going to be in trouble anyway.
Yeah. And I just got to say one thing that I learned from a great interview I did with Andrew Wallace, OBE of Unsight UK, Modern Day Slavery. So the main three things I learned last year were sustainability, diversity, and modern day slavery. So I don't know if it's me, but I'm hoping that there can be an encapsulated message about all those three. If there's this juggernaut of positive change to create sustainability, to create diversity in the workplace, and to just eradicate modern day slavery, because Andrew gave me this horrendous example that the kits that we're now using, it will have been touched by people who are unfortunately involved in the entrapment of via modern day slavery. But I'll get off my soapbox on that one, and we're looking to do something on the modern day slavery element, hopefully with Andrew and his team, to try and promote and create that change ongoing. So Belinda, any other events that you would like to excite us, titillate us about, or should we just get going with the AgriTech innovation event and the automating agricultural event in January?
Well, I know you've come to our vertical farming events in the past, and you vlogged at one of our big conferences we did on that. So I guess that it would be remiss of me not to give you a bit of oxygen back in exchange. So in February, I think, end of February, 25th of February, we're going to be looking at vertical farming and controlled environment again. And you very kindly did a podcast for us about skills needs in the vertical farming sector that I think we released back in the autumn, a light version we did. We're going to be having an all-day conference on controlled environment, agriculture and vertical farming. And one of so we're going to be hearing from some technology companies to hear about their progress. We're going to be hearing about investor appetite, to pick up on our previous topic. But the session that I'm particularly excited around is where we're going to be talking to some people who have innovations to really change the relationship of consumers with food. Now, whether that's around hyper short supply chains, whether it's about hyper local, whether it's about having a small device on your worktop in your kitchen that's growing controlled environment salads, leafy salads, so you've got a continuous supply of it. So it's this idea of exploring controlled environment and vertical farming really as an agent for social innovation around our food system. Wow. And so we're hearing from a company that is setting up a major vertical farming facility in the UK and wants particularly to work with local authorities around provision of healthy, nutritious food to schools, to hospitals, to prisons, through their kind of procurement system around the public sector. So this whole idea of how we can use the innovation of controlled environment production as an agent to sort of accelerate that social change. And we've been hearing a lot, particularly again in the UK, about quality of food being given in school lunches, through school vouchers through the pandemic, through school holidays. This whole idea of how can we use food in a really positive way, grounded in these new innovations. So I'm quite excited to hear about that one as well.
I don't know about you. Whenever I post anything on my feeds about vertical farming, they get by far the most readerships and comments. Question to you: does the vertical farming business model work?
Come along to our event on the 25th of February, and we'll be here asking exactly that question. Yeah, I mean,
dodge that bullet.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it? There's been, I think, a transition for more companies to be the platform providers, the platform technology providers, than the actual food producers, but there are still some very, very large facilities that are absolutely about food production. So, and you and I both know of examples where there are, if people can get their energy equation right, it can work. I think it can work. It's been a very dynamic sector in the UK, both ups and downs. I think the overall trajectory is up, and obviously it's working, you know, in countries like Singapore, where they do have their business model, you know, a bit more advanced.
Okay. I suppose I'm just a bit concerned about the sector because we've had there's a bit of a gold, well, there is a gold rush for the sector. And with our recruitment business, Red Fox, over the last year, 18 months, we've had so many people approach us stating that we want to set up a vertical farm. We need people. And when you actually drill down, and they're quite surprised and they think that I'm being aggressive towards them, but I'm trying to educate them because the one thing that I find time and time again is their margin aspirations. That we, I'll give an example that there was a Hong Kong fund that approached us, and they wanted to set up a vertical farming operation in London. And when I asked them about the business model and who they were going to supply, they just stated that they were going to supply the key supermarkets in the London area. So I then said, well, what margin aspirations have you got? Oh, we'll be working on a minimum of 40% gross margin. And then I had to educate them as to some of the businesses that you and I, Belinda, know very well, and the margins that they're making at the moment, which are significantly lower than that, dealing with the retailers. And they just seem to have this naivety that they could literally stick a brand, a label on their product, growing it in a closed building in London somewhere and get those margin aspirations. I go back to what Rabobank said just prior to COVID, that in 3 years' time, 90% of the people involved in vertical farming won't be in it. So I'm just a bit worried that there's a lot of these investors are very intelligent, but they're also a bit like sheep, and that they do tend to follow each other. And there seems to be this clamour for, especially for vertical farming, and if when you look at the, I will stop in a minute. When you look at the likes of say Plenty Ag in the States, so if people aren't aware, just have a dial up Plenty Ag on Google, and it's a fascinating business because they managed to squeeze $200 million out of the founder of Amazon as an initial seedling fund, and they had plans to set up 40 units globally. And we talked to some of that team, it must be near on 2 years ago. And it was like, Belinda, it was like talking to a cult. These individuals, they're just saying how they're going to change the world. There's too much water being used in traditional agriculture. Move it through to present day. All of those people that we've spoken to have all gone. They've all gone off to the next thing because I sort of vaguely followed them on LinkedIn. But what surprised me is that that business has now secured another $100 million from SoftBank to go to the next stage. But they've only got one unit. It's like, well, what have they done with the first $200 million? What are they going to do with this one, $100 million? So, Belinda, I want to be proved wrong. I want there to be glittering examples of vertical farming operations globally that can feed school kids, poor, impoverished, and perhaps not high-end restaurants and the likes of Dubai. I want it to work, but there does seem to be, in my view, a lot of naivety in the sector at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one of the challenges is it's very capital intensive. So as you were just talking then, I was thinking, well, is this so very different to, for example, the telecoms industry 20 years ago, when you almost need all those players, you need all those investments, you need all these different players coming through. Some will win, some will lose, most will lose, but actually advances the state of the art. So that you end up in a position where there are, you know, some dominant players and then some smaller ones that are feeding in platform technologies and innovation. But obviously it is different in the vertical farming space because of this incredibly resource intensive and capital intensive upfront costs. But I think we kind of need to go through this bit. And that's always the job of the innovators and the entrepreneurs, is you add value at your bit of it, and then you pass it on to somebody else. And yes, there may well be people will lose a lot of money, but there will be some people that I think will make a lot of money as well. And you've just got to hope you're in the latter, not the former camp.
And everyone, just another reason to attend Belinda and her team's events. What I found with those is that they actually accept people being slightly critical of a sector in a sector event, talking about the sector. That's the great thing. There's that complete open conversation to be had. It's not like you've got one person on a stage trying to sell snake oil and everyone being there's a lot of challenging conversations with the events that that Belinda and her team hold. So Belinda, to say membership, how do we get involved with on the basis that no one can meet anyone? How would someone become a member of AgriTech E, please?
Well, it's very easy. You go to the member pages on our website, and it talks you through the various tiers of membership. And my colleague, Becky, who's our membership manager, will be delighted to have a chat with anyone who wants to find out more or indeed to process your online payments. So it's very easy. And then you get into a whole system where we ask you for some content for the member page that we'll make for you. And then we're in this whole conversation around what do you want to get out of your membership? Would you like to meet? What have we got coming up that you might be interested in doing? And how can we support you? Because we want that renewal conversation in a year's time to be a really easy one. Join us, and then you're part of the network.
Belinda, well done. And just before we wrap up, we are in strange times. I'm just going to date this conversation again. So it's 2:41 GMT, Friday, the 15th of January, 2021. In the UK, we are, 2 weeks into our third lockdown. We've got a vaccine coming in, but it's pretty doom and gloom out there. And that's that comment can be replicated across the world. You are one of the leaders of the ag sector within the UK and fast becoming internationally. What is your advice to everyone at home who might be feeling a bit doom and gloom and wondering how they're actually going to get through the next 2-3 months? What is your advice to people to keep strong during the situation that we're working through, please?
Lordy. Goodness, I mean, we're all having to dig a bit deep at the moment, aren't we? And I could make the facetious comment about gin and chocolate, but I won't trivialise it with that. I think we have to stay focused on the bigger prize. And as I said earlier, you know, this phrase, control your airspace. It's a very frustrating time with all the uncertainty. And there's a lot of things being imposed upon us that I think we're all finding a little bit stressful and we can't control it. So having some sense of ownership and management over even the smallest things that you might have control over, and trying to just take joy in the small things, I guess, is what it's all about. I mean, it is tough, and I do fear for the mental health of, and particularly in our sector, an industry that, you know, particularly pre-farm gate, needs a lot of support. So I would say, hold the line, be strong, this will pass, and we will meet again. I think the Queen said that, didn't she, in her speech on Christmas Day? That's where I got it from, I think.
Or was that Netflix and The Crown? Or was that the same thing? I don't know. Let's be positive. Just to wrap up, when we get out of this and we can actually say hello to everyone, and where are you going to take your great team? Where are you going to have all the Christmas parties and birthdays that have been stored up? Where are you going to take them all?
Yeah, that's well, they're all big skiers.
They're
all going to want to go skiing, and I am not a skier. So they might all want to go skiing, and I'll sit at the bottom of the mountain drinking my glue vine and waiting for them all to come back and have a nice dinner, maybe.
Fantastic. And Belinda, we really look forward to seeing you, your team, and all of your other members, hopefully sooner rather than later. It's one of your events, but in the short term, the virtual hosting is, in my view, is going tremendously well. So again, if you're already a member and you haven't participated, why not? And if you want to be a member and participate, I think I've already got the link on the bottom of this page, but we'll also stick it on the various records. Join AgriTech E to find out what is going on in the hugely innovative world of agriculture. Belinda, thank you very much.
Great to see you, Max. Nice
Keep safe.
To you. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye.